today we'll talk about the Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument Reduction, in particular, though, the Bears Ears National Monument Reduction, simply because to reduce an area of 1.3 million acres to what it's been reduced 85% is really a terrible thing. So we have on the phone with us Will Rausch. Will, are you with us?
I am. Hi, Bill.
Appreciate you coming on like this. This is a really important thing to be talking about, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's the largest revocation of land protection in our country's history.
Well, and the thing was the tribes. Now, there were five tribes that formed a coalition, and this was going on for 8 to 10 years. This isn't just something that happened overnight in a midnight signature of the president. And those tribes, the Zuni, the two Ute tribes, Ute Mountain Ute and Uinta Uray tribe, and the Navajo and Hopi. I've worked with four of those five tribes and know a little bit about them, and they had recommended 1.9 million acres, and so to have it even reduced at the very start to 1.35 million is a question of whether or not it can protect the sacred landscape that's there. But 85% reduction is just criminal.
That's correct, and it's, you know, it's just extremely disrespectful of the tribes. You know, I think tribes across the country have been trying to regain access to and management, say, over their lands, and the designation of Bears Ears was a big step in that direction. And so to have the Trump administration roll that back so significantly is, you know, an impact to the landscape itself and those artifacts, but probably as importantly to the sovereignty and history of the tribes who live in the area.
Exactly. And it wasn't exact co-management agreement. That's very rare with government agencies. I know the Jemez tribe in New Mexico did that with one of the ranger districts, but they did get as close to that as possible so that they have a group that would be helping to manage that area. And that's not going to happen probably now with that much of reduction. And I think everyone owes it to themselves to go online and read the whole proclamation that was written for President Obama by Charles Wilkinson, a law professor at CU, who was a pro bono advisor for that whole group. And there's just some really beautiful words there that all of us that have been in that area would really take to heart. And I'll just read a section of it. From earth to sky, the region is unsurpassed in wonders. The star-filled nights and natural quiet of Bears Ears area transport visitors to an earlier eon as one of the most intact and least eroded areas in the continental United States. So, you know, it just was, I've never seen a presidential proclamation written that well that also reserved all of the rights that were already on that piece of land. It reserved those, including grazing. So a lot of the statements made by Orrin Hatch and other people that supported this, most of all the Utah delegation, even the governor, are just not truthful, are they?
Yeah, that's correct. Grazing would be maintained. Really, the you know, the biggest change is preservation. You know, that comes with protection of the monument is preservation of those artifacts to prevent them from being looted and damaged. More of a conservation mindset in the management, and then, you know, preventing fossil fuel extraction.
Right.
And that's, you know, when you look at the boundaries, the new boundaries that the Trump administration is proposing, it's very clear what the motivation was for a lot of this, was to open up new land to fossil fuel extraction.
Exactly.
Especially in the Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument, there's large coal deposits there that were removed from development possibility in the original designation by the Clinton administration, and now those lands would be available for you know, huge new coal mines. And so this is an action done at the behest of, you know, both kind of anti-public lands extremists and the fossil fuel industry, contrary to the wishes of the vast majority of the American public.
And also the untrue statements about it would hurt the local economy, but it's just not so, because Utah tourism accounts for $8 billion annually. And even, you know, a lot of us are concerned about industrial tourism, but I'd a lot rather have industrial tourism, the impacts of which can be dealt with, than tearing up the land for uranium mine or for fossil fuel extraction.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, if you look at some of the strongest supporters of keeping the monument designations as they were was the Chamber of Commerce in Escalante, Utah. They went from a town with a, you know, pretty slow economy to really kind of a booming one based on folks coming to see Grand Staircase Escalante. So it's proven to be this very sustainable long-term growth for that community. And there were folks in the town of Bluff right next to Bears Ears that were similarly looking forward to that kind of huge economic boost that comes with these protected landscapes, who would much rather see it protected.
Exactly. And even the Mormon Stewardship Alliance supported the designation of the monument as well. It's interesting that Secretary of Interior Zinke had said that the tribes were happy with his review, which, by the way, was not made public. I think that in itself, the lack of transparency there for the review of whether to reduce these monuments that were on a hit list of the president's. It didn't set well with one of the Navajo representatives. Davis Philfred said, "I haven't been happy with him since day one," speaking of Zinke as Secretary of Interior. "I don't know what that word happy is." And later on said, "This is all uncalled for." There's an issue in High Country News, May 15th, 2017, that talked about fact-checking a lot of these statements that were made opposing the monument designation and finding out that they were really untrue. It's kind of important for people to check and do their homework, because this is really important. It's unprecedented, this many acres of reduction. And, you know, the whole area of Bears Ears in particular, it was 80 years ago, there were attempts made to set aside that area for protection. In the 1930s, there were 4 million acres as Escalante National Monument proposed by Secretary of Interior Harold Ickles. And a lot of work went into that. And after the Second World War, there were politicians that resisted, including portions of Canyonlands and Capitol Reef and Natural Bridges and all those beautiful places most of us have had the fortune of visiting. In the 1980s, then National Parks Conservation Association, I believe, had a proposal. And even a Utah congressman, Wayne Owens, from the 1990s, supported introducing a bill. And he was really treated pretty badly by the Tea Party group there and wasn't even allowed to be on one of the ballots for, I think it was a primary. So there's just been a lot of work trying to preserve this, and when it happened, then this whole action is just unconscionable.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. There's a very long history of the tribe advocating for this, and so to see it undone, you know, with so little review and discounting their opinions and the opinions of the majority of Americans is really disappointing.
And it's not over. A lot of people think, you know, well, this is all that they're going to do to us. And it's not true, because Rob Bishop, a representative from Utah, who once tried to here recently pass a bill in Congress that was going to sell off some public land, and his the reaction to him was pretty powerful, and he withdrew that. But he also has a bill before Congress to make it possible to reduce any acreage that would be set aside as a national monument by a president to 85,000 acres, which is just a grab out of the sky. There's nothing sacred about that number at all. And by doing that, you know, it could undermine any future setting aside of any national monuments. And so I see no reason for that reduction for future presidents to set aside a national monument.
Yeah, it's important to remember that there's so many national monuments that have become national parks, places like Grand Canyon, Glacier, Grand Teton, Olympic National Park, Acadia, you know, some of the real crown jewels. And if Bishop's bill were to pass, or had been in effect when those monuments were designated, none of those monuments would have been designated, and therefore we wouldn't have those national parks. Not only is there that 85,000 acre upper limit cap to a monument. There's also a whole bunch of other restrictions that would curtail the power of the president to designate national monuments of even smaller sizes without, you know, getting approval from state legislatures and congressional delegations from states. And, you know, that simply wouldn't have been possible in places like Grand Canyon or Glacier when they were first protected. So it's a really short-sighted vision of preserving America's natural heritage, I think, those bills.
Right. And Terry Tempest Williams, who's a great writer, I really like her works. I had talked one time on the program about one of her books about national parks, the Hour of Land. And she said, if we do not rise to the defense of these sacred lands, Bears Ears National Monument will be reduced to oil and gas rigs and derricks shining bright against an oil sky of obliterated stars. I don't think there's anything stronger you could say. Those of us who really appreciate that country, which is one of the best places to go to not see light pollution that I know of, Canyonlands there in the Maze and in the area in Bears Ears. And I'm sure you've been to Bears Ears in that area. A lot of us have. I fought fire in there when I was with the BLM and Forest Service, and it's just a beautiful area. And to reduce it this much is just, I hope, the suits that are brought against the administration are successful. Do you know anything about those suits at all?
Yeah, so there's been a number of lawsuits brought against the Trump administration challenging his rollback to the boundaries of Bears Ears and Grand Staircase Escalante. Groups of tribes, local businesses, and conservation organizations have all sued in response. Those lawsuits will probably move relatively quickly. There's always the risk that, you know, while these areas are unprotected, further damage could be done to some of the artifacts.
Absolutely, yeah.
We should probably be, you know, in the next several months, you know, watch for news on those cases. And the main argument there basically says, you know, Congress gave the president the power under the Antiquities Act to protect places, but nowhere in the Antiquities Act does it say you can undesignate a national monument. And so it's against the Antiquities Act, and it also kind of touches on a constitutional issue where, you know, it's very clear that the president can only act if Congress has given him powers under the Constitution. And we and other folks think this is a pretty clear case of the president acting without authority granted by Congress.
Right, and Congress is the only, they're the only people that can actually do away with the Antiquities Act as well. I mean, they could just go ahead and revoke it.
That's right, and that's, you know, that's what Rob Bishop's bill does, if not in
right.
letter and in spirit. The other kind of twist to all this happening right now is that there's been two bills introduced by the Utah delegation that, you know, basically mirror President Trump's proclamation revoking the two earlier monuments, Bears Ears and Grand Staircase. And so these bills would do much the same thing, shrink the boundaries, reduce the role of the tribes in the management, and a couple other things that are even worse, like handing over management of some of the roads to local authorities. Two important things there. One, it's really important to get engaged and call your congressman about this. Tell them to vote no against these bills so that they don't become law. If they were to become law, then the ability to challenge them in courts is greatly reduced. So if folks want to call Representative Tipton, who sits on the committees hearing those bills, his number is 970-241-2499, and those bill names are H.R. 4558 for Grand Staircase and H.R. 4532 for Bears Ears. There's more information at the Wilderness Workshop's website. The other interesting thing about those bills is it's a pretty clear indication that Trump's actions were in fact illegal. If they weren't, you wouldn't really need these bills. They're pretty much duplicative of his proclamation. And so this is basically a backstop for when the courts hopefully determine that President Trump's actions were illegal.
You know, and we mentioned earlier a little bit about concern about protection for those lands, and Rob Bishop again had said that, you know, this is a case of Washington dictating their livelihoods ostensibly to conserve land, a task they have been only ably performing themselves for generations, which really isn't true, because for generations there's been pot hunting and looting going on by those local people that seem to think the land is theirs, that it's not really the rest of our the Americans' public land. Any comment about that?
Well, I think that's exactly right. I think, you know, this is one of those amazing cases where you essentially have a living museum out on the landscape. And as you said, for decades, unfortunately, folks who live there have just been going out and collecting pottery shards and arrow points, and in rare and unfortunate cases, even, you know, using petroglyphs as target practice. And so clearly the local governments and the state of Utah have not done enough to protect, something that's of a value, not only the tribes, but the entire country. And that's why the monument was needed, and that's why it was needed in the size it was. If you talk to folks who spend time in the Bears Ears area, they'll tell you, you know, you can't go more than a few hundred yards in places without, you know, running across artifacts of the Puebloan cultures. And I can't think of another place in the world where you have an entire landscape that showcases an ancient civilization. And for us to be so short-sighted as to think we can shrink the size of it and develop it for other means is really a shame.
Absolutely. You know, there's some other threats to public land at this time. Could you comment a little bit on the introduction of a bill to allow mountain bikes in wilderness areas?
Sure. Quite a bit earlier this year, a bill was introduced that would dramatically change the Wilderness Act to allow, you know, essentially non-motorized wheeled travel of all kinds, whether it's a mountain bike or a game cart, a stroller of any kind, however you might classify that, in wilderness areas. And recently it got a hearing and is actually up for a vote tomorrow in committee. I think it's good to dig into the issue a little bit. I think for a lot of folks, you know, they kind of say, well, what's the harm in allowing, say, mountain bikes in wilderness areas? And really, there's kind of two main issues there, or maybe three. One is just the fact that there's not a lot of wilderness areas. It's about 3% of the land in the lower 48. About 15% of Colorado's public lands are wilderness. So it makes sense to set aside some places where folks can go to have, you know, kind of a quieter, more peaceful, primitive experience. There's plenty of places to go mountain biking. I spend most of my summer mountain biking, and there's no shortage of trails around here or elsewhere in Colorado. So that's one. The second one is that, because you can travel so much farther on a mountain bike, you impact more land. For the most part, the impact of a mountain biker or a hiker or a horseback rider is probably pretty similar, but as folks know, you can travel a lot farther on a mountain bike, so you're impacting a bigger chunk of habitat for wildlife. But I think lastly, and maybe more importantly right now, you know, the Wilderness Act is one of our country's most important conservation laws. It's the gold standard for land protection. And to start opening that up to changes when we've got, you know, arguably the most anti-public lands, anti-conservation, anti-environmental Congress and administration in our country's history is, you know, kind of dangerous in the extreme. It's very easily to imagine that we'll be, you know, changing the Wilderness Act for wheeled mechanized travel now and then opening it up to, you know, some limited exceptions for mining or, small hydro project development in the next year. The folks sponsoring this legislation are the same folks who are wanting to get rid of our national monuments. So it's just not a good idea to be working with those folks to make any changes to the Wilderness Act.
Well, and there's no need to. And the sad thing is, in the 60s, that it was a bipartisan legislature that worked years to make that Wilderness Act a reality. And we just don't see that kind of cooperation for the good of the people in this nation like we did during those years. And it was a hard-fought battle. It was not an easy thing. And to come along then 50 years later and want to change it, like you say, is just, for those of us who love wilderness, it's just unacceptable. And so I appreciate you talking about that.
And it's, you know, one thing that's really clear in the original Wilderness Act is that the authors and Congress drew the line at mechanization. They didn't know what new technology would be around in 50 or 100 or 150 years, but they said mechanization is where we want to kind of draw the line and provide for this unique experience to future generations. So there was never any intent to allow mountain bikes or any other form of wheeled travel into wilderness areas.
Exactly. Yeah, it's just an assault again on something that a lot of us hold sacred, and it's too bad people don't have the attitude that indigenous peoples have, that what decisions you make, think about it going into even under the seventh generation. And certainly if we allow, like you say, these assaults now to happen, then it just opens the door for things that none of us want to see in wilderness. In the few remaining minutes we have here, could you tell us a little bit about the Crystal River Trail? There was some controversy last week that seemed to be sort of unnecessary and about lack of collaboration with the county. Could you just briefly tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Yeah, so as folks probably know, the Picking County is proposing a bike trail up the Crystal River Valley, and they're looking at basically putting the trail in two different alignments or combinations of those, one roughly parallel to Highway 133 and one on the other side of the Crystal River on an old railroad grade. And the Wilderness Workshop thinks the idea of a trail up the Crystal is a good one, and we're supportive of looking to see how that might happen. Our biggest concern has been around any potential trail impact to wildlife. Really important bighorn sheep and elk habitat, habitat for bears and deers and a bunch of animals in the Crystal Valley. And because there's a decent bit of land developed, there's a few spots that are extra important for wildlife, places like Faloha, Avalanche Creek, Red Wing Point, and Janeway. And so we've been advocating for wildlife and pushing the county to choose a wildlife-friendly alignment. The controversy you're referring to is that, I think the county, for whatever reasons, has thought we were simply against the trail, and that's just not true. We want
right.
to find an alignment that's good
right.
for everybody.
Right. I appreciate your comment on that particularly, and thanks for being with us again this time, Will. And again, Will Rausch of the Wilderness Workshop. Go to their website and learn a little bit more about what we've been talking about today. This is Bill Kite, your host for KDNK's For Land's Sake. Tune in next month, same time, same place. Until then, whatever you do, do to the earth for land's sake.